Cipher Network production.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Bill Cameron on assignment. He is not at the Ringo Starr concert this time. That was earlier in the week. Came back and had a rave review of Ringo Starr and his all-star band. Mentioned that, what's his name? From Men at Work. The guy who's Colin Hay, the singer songwriter dude. They did Land Down Under. They did Who Can It Be Now. They did Overkill. So they did some of the really cool. He's one of my favorite 80s pop rock bands. And so cool to hear that Bill was able to see Ringo Starr among others in the All Star Band, and he's I think he's down at the beach. You can never keep up with what Bill Cameron's up to. Is he gone Monday too?
I think he said he's gone Monday.
I think so. So we'll figure it out. But in the meantime, we got a show to do, and we're thrilled to have on a special Friday edition of the Drive with our good buddy Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. How you doing, bud?
I mean, it's good to be on a Friday, a little bit different, shake it up a little bit. I was here Monday, and so much has changed during the week. It's
you have had a couple of pieces of news involving Auburn, both the football team. We were talking about negative momentum with recruiting on Monday, and it seems like that's changed a little bit. Regards to their the class of 2026 on the high school football recruiting trail. We were also previewing the NBA draft a little bit earlier in the week, and we found out last night where Jani Broome is headed as the Philadelphia 76ers select arguably the most decorated player in Auburn history with their second round pick. What was he? His 35th overall is when Broome goes to the Sixers, and he's going to have a chance to break in immediately. I think that's a team that would love, like, with the kind of superstars that the Sixers have under contract and the kind of big money they're paying to Joel Embiid and Paul George and Tyrese Maxey and the contracts they're gonna have to pay to McCain, especially. Like, I think they would love for a second round pick to be able to give them some minutes that allows them to save money elsewhere in the short term. And if Jani can give them enough minutes, he plays his way into the rotation and into eye-watering amounts of money, and so it's an opportunity for Jani. I still talked about it a little bit yesterday, Brian. I still worry that he is a guy with a fives skill set in the NBA in a fours body. Like, I wonder if he's kind of between, he's almost a man without a country in that regard, because it's going to be tough, like, to play his style in the NBA against the kind of super athletes that you face at the five. It's a big reason why, I don't know if you've been paying attention to the Blazers taking Hanson Yang with the 16th overall pick, but it's about as universally panned a first-round pick as I can remember. I've seen a couple of places giving it D-minuses or Fs overall, and it comes down to, if you're going to try to play down low, and I think Yang is 7 foot or 7 foot one, but it's about upper body strength. It's about it's about size too. But it's about being able to match athleticism with these guys. And I know folks might point to Eastern European players like Nikola Jokic or Sabonis, and it's like, you know, the first of all, those guys are so much stronger than people realize. Like, a huge part of Jokic's game is that he puts his shoulder into your chest and you go backwards. Like, even if you were Dwight Howard at his absolute best, like some of the strongest guys to ever play in the league, you go backward, and that enables him to have that space. There's doubts about whether or not a Hanson Yang is going to be able to do that at the NBA level, and I think there's similar doubts as far as, like, if you're wondering why a guy who can have Jani Broome's season, National Player of the Year type of season, and go 35th overall in the draft, and go behind a couple of posts who didn't have a season, like the one Jani just had, it's because it's a question of how his game and his physicality will translate to the NBA. He's got tremendous skill and feel for the game. I think that if he can show himself to be enough of an athlete and versatile enough at the five and the four, suddenly this is somebody who has a real chance at minutes in Philadelphia and you know, the opportunity to carve out a role. I could just also see it being a struggle for him in the NBA. Like, I could see just it being like it's so tough to carve out a real role as a big man in the NBA these days, and you have to be able to do so much. And I think a guy like Jani could end up being a perfect example of just how difficult it is to make that jump when you can have as dominant a year in the SEC as the one he just had and struggle to catch on at the NBA level. I think that could show people like what kind of jump we're talking about. But I also think Jani could have, like I think folks are, you know, people are focusing on some of the wrong stuff when it's like, oh, look at his vertical leap. It's like, that's not going to be the difference between him being, you know, the athleticism's part of it, but it's about more than just, you know, whether or not he can, you know, he can jump. And I'm hopeful as someone who had a lot of positive interactions with Jani over the last 3 years, like, I'm hopeful that he's able to realize his dream of being an NBA player for a long time.
Well, I don't think he's a great fit skill set wise for the NBA, today's NBA, at all. But I think the 76ers, when you got a player like Embiid who's hurt all the time, and even when he's healthy, he probably does not need to be playing, you know, a lot of minutes.
And you can't pay Embiid's backups a lot of money because you're paying Embiid about $60 million a year.
So maybe he may have found a perfect match there in Philadelphia for his abilities there. He does lack the athleticism. He's not a catch-and-shoot guy. You know, he can hit a three-pointer, but, you know, he's not going to light it up from outside. He doesn't have that, you know, just natural ability to, you know, pop jump shots from three-point range like a lot of NBA players do now. But I do think in the right system, he could have a chance to stick with the Sixers. We'll see. But even if he doesn't, I think this is a great experience for him, and he can play somewhere professionally. He can absolutely play somewhere professionally and make a good living out of it.
Yeah, when I talk about Jani Broome's game translating, I'm talking about the NBA. Like, this guy, you know, if it doesn't work in the NBA, if that's the way this thing goes, Jani Broome's going to play basketball for a long time if that's what he wants to do. Like, it may not be at the NBA level, but he's going to play, and he could be a nightmare in some other leagues around the world, but being a big in the NBA is, I mean, it's you're facing off against, and people say it and it's cliche, but you're facing off against the best athletes in the world. Like, that's life.
Yep.
That's life at the 3-4 in the NBA. And I know Jani's probably not going to play the 3 very much, but the 5 is going to be a tough, you know, against some of the guys that people use around the rim in the NBA. Like, it's going to be tough for him to survive there too. So I'm optimistic. I think there's some really good things about this landing spot for JB, but there's also questions about how his game translates to the NBA level and whether or not he and how that works. I also want to see Jani's top 10 movies of the 21st century because I don't know if you've seen, everybody's doing their lists right of you. So the New York Times put together, I think they asked about 500 critics and filmmakers and different figures in the industry to list their 10 best movies since 2000. and they've done like a countdown this week, and they've had, you know, so a lot of people on social media are filling out their own. And Janai's a big movie guy. Got to meet Morgan Freeman that time, remember, courtside at the at the Ole Miss game. And yeah, it'd be interesting to know what his list looks like. But no, I mean, Philadelphia's going to be a great opportunity for Janai Broom and the first Auburn player drafted by the Sixers
since
Charles Barkley was the fifth overall pick just over 40 years ago. So it's a big opportunity for Janai Broom and hopefully he gets the shot. And I know that even some former teammates were, I mean, like Chad's out in L.A. Chad was celebrating the Janai Broom draft pick on social media from wherever he was watching the NBA draft in Southern California. Auburn, the only Auburn player selected. I mean, a lot of SEC players were drafted over the two rounds of the NBA draft. You did get some Auburn players landing as undrafted free agents around the league. I believe Miles Chaney and Dylan, is that right?
Yeah, I think that's right. Chaney went to Cleveland. Miles was
Denver. Somewhere in Texas. Is it Dallas?
And I think Dylan was
Dylan's going Sacramento. To Sacramento. I know Miles ended up somewhere.
I think it is the Mavs.
Is the Mavericks okay? So yeah, it's and Dylan. I mean, I'm really curious to see how an NBA team views Dylan Cardwell's potential role, because that's another guy who I think the drawbacks of his game were pronounced enough to keep him out of the draft.
Right.
Free throw shooting, the lack of range, he does foul a lot defensively. The stuff he does well, he might be able to do it well enough to play his way into a real shot with an NBA team as a rim protector, as a rebounder, as a guy who can score around the rim. Like I think he's somebody who it's interesting because it, you know, a lot of the physical drawbacks for Dylan I think has a more prototypical body and skill set for an NBA five these days than Janai does. But Janai was a more successful college basketball player. I think Janai is the more skilled overall player. But as far as carving out an opportunity as a role player in the NBA, I could see how Dylan is able to. And again, it's tough to go from undrafted free agent to really anything in the NBA. It happens, but it's tough. But I think Dylan Cardwell is somebody who, you know, has the opportunity to try to catch, as you know, if the Kings value the stuff Dylan does well enough, and they can develop and or overlook some of the less ideal aspects of his game, I think Dylan could be somebody who gets a real look from the NBA.
I would love to see that, of course, because Dylan is a great young man and an Auburn graduate and is going to represent this university well, whatever he decides to do. I'm not sure that he has enough offense in his game to be an NBA player. I do think, though, that possibly Miles Kelly, because he's that 3-and-D guy, because every NBA team needs multiple 3-and-D guys. If he can become more of a D guy, and if his 3-point shooting can take the next step and be that lethal on the next level a little bit farther out, you got to get it off quicker. You got to be if that can all happen, I think he might have a chance maybe to make a roster or work his way to a roster eventually. But I just think Auburn had a great team that played great together. But it wasn't filled with a bunch of NBA prospects. It was just a really, really good team that was really well coached and played really, really hard.
Yeah, the guy who might be the most serious NBA prospect from last year's team could still be on the team. In Tahad Pettiford. We'll see how it goes this season for Tahad. And nothing against Janai, who I am thrilled he was drafted and hope he gets a real opportunity in Philadelphia to play his way into the NBA. But when Auburn was facing Like the toughest bigs Auburn faced this year, often it was Dillon that they sent to, you know, if you think about Kalkbrenner in the Creighton game, even Danny Wolfe against Michigan in the, you know, as far as the NCAA tournament games, like those are matchups where it was Dillon Cardwell's ability to protect the rim and hold his own against. And by the way, both of those guys were drafted too. And Wolf was a first round pick. The guy that Auburn saw in the Yale game and the back to back NCAA tournaments.
I think I saw Kalkbrenner go last night.
Kalkbrenner, I think, went right next to Broome, either right before or right after Janai. So I mean, those were names that were drafted too. And I think that speaks to, you know, the fact that Dillon was able to go punch for punch with multiple bigs that were drafted in this year's tournament or in this year's NBA draft. It's another reason to believe he maybe can get an opportunity. Again, you want to temper it because it's an undrafted free agent. But I agree with you about Miles. I think that when you can shoot like that, you've got a chance. Kobe Brea was drafted in the second round, and I think that's an example too. The Kentucky guard. You can have some drawbacks to your game, but if you shoot at an NBA level, teams might give you a real shot. You know, they might be willing to overlook a lot. And I think in the case of Miles, not that he's got glaring flaws to his game or anything, but I think that jump shot could give him, you know, as a catch and shoot weapon, he could be able to open some eyes in the summer league and surprise some people.
Yeah, we'll see how that
as
goes.
Well.
Yeah.
Chaney's on a two way. Would love to see Chaney. Would love to see Chaney Johnson. I think the odds are probably against him at the NBA level. But the odds were against him jumping to the SEC when he was when he was in Huntsville. So I think it's overall a good week for Auburn basketball in that so many of these guys are going to get opportunities in the NBA. And like I mentioned, Tahad Pettiford back for another season was not involved in the draft proceedings this week. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline presented by our friends at Skybar. You can also text the show, 334-564-1840. That's the Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast. I'm Dan Peck. That's Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. We've got Drew at the controls. We'll be back with more. This is The Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio with Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, 334-321-1390. Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. Talked a little NBA draft in that first segment with big news for a couple of Auburn guys. Janai Broome getting drafted by Philly. Chaney, Dillon, and Miles all signing with NBA teams as undrafted free agents. Pivoting to football a little bit. As I mentioned at the top of the show, Monday there was a lot of talk of the negative flips, negative momentum on the recruiting trail. What was the cause? What could be done to reverse course? And in the days since that show, Auburn pulls off something of a stunner, going several states away, and landing what looks like it could be the high school quarterback they're taking in the class of 2026.
Yeah, and let's just add, they also got, since that show, a big old offensive lineman from down under, New Zealand.
We'll talk about my man as well. Yeah. The big fella, a really exciting offensive line project out of the NFL. The NFL
Academy,
The NFL Academy of the South Pacific, I believe, the Australia, New Zealand, and I would imagine more of those players are going to be on the way to college football.
Sure.
As the NFL gets more serious about turning rugby and Aussie rules football players, other than kickers, like turning Aussie rules football players into offensive linemen and running backs. And there was a couple years ago, there was a Aussie rules player who played running back for the Niners, like came over and like made the team as a kick returner and a running back. It was during the rebuild for the Niners. But right. But I mean it's and of course Alexander Volkanovski has pivoted from Aussie rules football to being a multiple time UFC champion. But lost about 80 pounds and became a multiple time UFC champion. I'm really intrigued by the big fella.
Can you pronounce his name?
I'm working on
Nikau Happy. Happy.
I believe it's either Nikau or Nikau.
Nikau. Happy.
I think Happy is right. Okay. I was gonna wait to see how you attempted the first
thing. I don't know. But let me say this.
I think it's Nikau. So
yeah. Auburn has struggled recruiting offensive tackles. They've not only struggled signing, you know, the five-star, I'm going to start for 3 years and then go to NFL guys. They've also struggled just getting offensive tackle bodies on campus. And that is finally changing. And if you're not going to be able to sign or win a recruiting battle for the, you know, the five-star, you know, can't-miss guy, go out and get guys like Happy, who is 6'7", 350-plus. If you watch some of his videos, he was here at camp. He can really, really move.
Super impressive-looking athlete. Like, when you consider the height and weight,
right.
I think some folks might think, oh, he's going to look bloated. He's going to have a gut or seem like he's remarkably athletic seeming at that weight.
Right.
Like watching him, and again, just watching him do footwork drills and things like that. Like that was a conclusion. And it's like, oh, okay, it would make sense if you told me he is someone who, he wasn't just a big guy that got noticed on the street. This is someone with an athletic background who is now pivoting to football.
That's right, and you know,
he American rules football.
He can have a couple of years here at Auburn to develop. You know, Auburn's got some dudes at tackle now, and a little bit of depth there, and some guys coming up. So you're getting a big guy that could potentially, you know, his potential is, you know, future, you know, really good SEC starter, and you know, maybe more.
We had a caller when we were talking about the Happy stuff earlier this week. We had a caller say, is this a guy who might need to play football at a lower level, and you know, if instead of making his, like, if he's going to play at an academy and then come to an SEC school, like, is it going to be tough? Is that transition going to be difficult? And my answer was, we'll see. Like, to me, he's seems like an obvious redshirt candidate.
Yes.
Like, you know, the thought that he's coming in and like it feels like that's a gigantic leap. I bet at the end of year one, you sort of assess where he is, you assess the depth chart, and just like with pretty much anyone in college football, you know, you'll decide if he's at the right level or if he needs to get on the field somewhere else and play his way back into the SEC. Like, or he could be someone, like you said, who after a year or two, maybe he just needs an extra year. You know, sort of an extra, you know, a bonus redshirt year, and then after 2 years in the program as a third year sophomore, this is somebody who could be properly seasoned and ready. It's an interesting, it feels like a very low risk, high reward sort of bargain by Auburn. And yeah, maybe it doesn't pan out because making the jump from the NFL Academy to the SEC is pretty difficult as far as the level of competition that you're facing. If it pans out, if the athleticism and, you know, if the football ability catches up to what seems to be some pretty intriguing raw tools when you're talking about a 6'7", 370-pound athlete, then certainly, you know, I think that could be that could be a really interesting addition by Auburn. And it shows you we've got a coaching staff, I think just like in men's basketball, coaching staff willing to leave no stone unturned as far as their search for their search for players. I mean, Bruce Pearl's going to Eastern Europe. Bruce Pearl's going to D2. Bruce Pearl's going to junior college. Like, you see where Bruce is going to, and I think you're seeing a willingness from Hugh Freeze and his staff to find players that can help them at any level. Now, you know, guys who played D1 ball, guys who haven't played D1 ball, guys who haven't played American football before who are coming in because they're really impressive-looking athletes from New Zealand.
Yeah, and this fits into the new era, too, the revenue sharing. You know, if you have a room of offensive linemen and you're paying, you know, all these guys, you know, six or seven, eight guys, starters money, maybe you don't have the budget to bring in a bunch of five stars in this class. So you go out and try to find guys like Heppy to come in and develop and maybe turn into that five star in a few years, which brings me straight into the quarterback position, which is definitely a position where Auburn is paying a guy like Jackson Arnold and a guy like Deuce Knight starters type money, SEC starting type money to be here at Auburn. They can't fill out a room with, you know, four players or whatever being paid that type of money. It just doesn't work into the budget. So you've got to go out there and find a guy that's a little bit more developmental, although I will say Peyton Falzone from Nazareth, Pennsylvania is maybe even above what I thought Auburn could get. And to flip a guy from Pennsylvania from Penn State, that tells you that anybody who was, you know, thinking that Auburn had forgotten how to recruit, right, on Monday was sadly mistaken. This staff can still go out and get really good kids from other states and right out from the noses of other programs.
And at the end of the day, your timing and your accuracy throwing the football is the number one trait. Is the most important thing. Having said that, you hear about Peyton and you hear about the prototypical size, who's 6'5" and
over 200 pounds.
And someone who has run for his share of yards.
And is a track star.
I was going to say, and came over from a track and field background. Yeah. I mean, that's really intriguing because I think by and large, you associate scramblers with, that's generally maybe a shorter quarterback's game. And with, I mean, I know there are, look, Cam Newton was tall, Vince Young was tall. Like there are exceptions, but you know, I think some folks might think, oh, this guy's going to be a little bit more stationary. And no, he's. I mean, look, I don't think Hugh Freeze is recruiting quarterbacks that can't use their legs to extend play. Maybe you don't need to break games open with 80-yard runs down the field, but you need to be able to keep plays alive.
You need for the defense to have to count for you.
With your feet. Right. And it sounds like that's a trait of every quarterback on scholarship on the team. Yep. And that's something they've looked for in high school quarterbacks and seemingly found in Peyton Falzone.
And you never know what's going to happen to quarterback. You just never know. Once the season starts, no matter how good somebody looks in camp or in practice, you never know what it's going to look like on the field. Auburn's got three pretty good options. I think they will get good quarterback play from one of them this fall, but I think Falzone is a perfect guy to come in next year and compete right away. And
Gus Falzone? Maybe,
yeah. But I love his name, Peyton. Of course, what quarterback would you not want that's named Peyton, right?
Sure.
Okay. And then Falzone just sounds like a great Italian name. I don't know what his
we just got background done talk, is. We just got done talking about a quarterback named Peyton for 2 years. Now we have to clarify when we're talking about Peyton, we mean Falzone.
I was thinking Peyton Manning, but you're right. I didn't think about that. I did not think that through very good before I said it.
So. No. One and again, you know, and that's something we talk. We got to take a break, but so I don't want to totally pivot topics. But when you think about Jackson Arnold and Deuce Knight and the like, that, yeah, how they've constructed this roster. We've been talking a lot about the $20.5 million salary cap. You know, the revenue sharing money and how programs are going to distribute that. I mean, so you know, some of that's. Now, you know, we'll get into another topic, so we'll talk about this when we come back. But Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com is hanging out with us, and it's always great to hang with Brian on a beautiful Friday afternoon here in Auburn. Drew at the controls, Dan Peck here in the studio. We'll be back. You're listening to The Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back. This is the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Chilling with you. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. Brian, we were just chatting during the commercial break about, and I think these are questions that are probably going on around the country in and around different athletic departments. When you talk about the revenue sharing implementation of the $20.5 million. I think the simplest way to describe it is a salary cap. It's, you know, I know that's, it's not salary because then there would be employees, but $20.5 million that, right, that programs can distribute to athletes directly. A lot of places are announcing that they're going to be using PayPal. Like I think a lot of the major conferences are talking about. I think the Big 12 announced that yesterday, and there's more deals to come. So it's like,
make sure you got a good password.
Yeah,
just and secure that.
Yeah,
secure your PayPal.
Several unique characters. Yes. and numbers. But it raises questions about sort of how this is going to be distributed. And I said earlier in the week, and I know my plan has been critically panned for a variety of reasons, but it's like I would think that you would have figuring out how much of the revenue sharing money, like if you have $20.5 million to distribute between July 1st and June of next year, figuring out how much of that goes to players that are joining the team on the recruiting trail, you know, figuring out how much of it needs to be reserved for recruiting versus distributed to your current players, yeah, is
difficult.
Yeah,
but they've got dudes that are hired just to do that.
Exactly, because I would think that if you have $15 million to spend on your football team, I would wonder if you have all $15 million of that committed to your current roster right now, and then any promises you make on the recruiting trail would need to go against next year's $20.5 million. But under that plan, anyone who joins the team in January, high schoolers who reclassify and join and graduate early, or players from the transfer portal who join the team in January, like those players wouldn't get paid until,
yeah,
August or September.
No transfers coming to Auburn and standing around 6 months before it gets a check or whatever it is. That ain't happening.
Right. And I would think, well, maybe they would if that's how everybody was doing it. But it doesn't seem like that's going to be the industry standard. And you sort of, I mean, I don't know how you know.
I don't know that for sure. I'm just.
Yeah, but
I'm just,
sort of. Yeah, I mean, what you suspect,
yeah,
as far as how teams are handling things?
Yeah, and you know, I think it is a difficult process to figure everything out, to figure out what's going to be available, to try to figure out what's going to be available for real NIL, whatever that is, and interpret that into how much you can offer this many players for at this positions. I think it's a very, very complicated thing, and I think Auburn is hiring, is adding people to figure those things out, because it's not an easy thing to do.
And it's also probably not something that coaches want to be spending a ton of their time doing, right? I mean, when you think about the other responsibilities of a head coach or a coordinator or position coaches in college football, the thought that you're going to be, you know, you're putting on the old the accountant visor, right?
Got enough on your plate already.
Yeah, and crunching the numbers on a, you know, on a calculator or something. Like, no, I think, yeah, that's it would make sense why programs are stocking up on GMs and those kind of figures and thinking. But yeah, I'm just like it does make it even tougher when you factor in like, oh, some of this money needs to be saved for recruiting, like some of this budget, and you know, I guess that's. It could vary program to program, but like you said, a lot of these guys aren't going to want to sit around and wait until next year. It's like, oh, well, we already spent our $20.5 million, so we're going to gray shirt your revenue sharing money, right? So you come join us in January, and then in August we promise, wink wink, that there's you know, some revenue. Like,
good luck with that.
Yeah, I think that's a. That's an easy way to find yourself at the bottom of the conference.
That's right.
In some of these places. So, yeah, I think this is it's one of the, you know, and I reading some of the press releases from Deloitte about, we talked about it some yesterday too, Brian, that I find it really interesting that the clearinghouse, that reading more about the clearinghouses, it seems like what the primary goal is to get rid of collectives.
Yes.
Like places that are. Places that are directly related to the university and or tied to the athletic department, and places that exist just to advance the interests of the athletic department. We had someone, you know, sort of like, name a random national brand. If that national brand wants to sponsor a student athlete, it's going to be scrutinized far less by the clearinghouse. Then it's a pretty quick turnaround on that versus if someone with direct ties to the university is trying to is trying to get some sort of, like, that. That's when the clearinghouse is going to a person or an organization with more clear ties to an athletic department.
Right.
And they're also, and I think this is legal protection, Brian, the clearinghouse is not declining deals. The clearinghouse is, it's almost like a recommendation sort of deal. Like, they recommend that you do this, or they recommend that you renegotiate, or they say it's not cleared, but the student athlete ultimately gets to make the decision about whether or not they want to take the deal, and schools ultimately can decide, all right, well, schools will know that this deal wasn't cleared by the clearinghouse. They'll make the decision as to whether or not to play the student athlete in question and the eligibility. It's a
can't wait to see how this gets sorted out in court.
You can't wait. Well, the first time the clearinghouse, and I guess it is, like I said, it's legal protection that they're not going to say you can't do it. They're going to say they haven't cleared it, and sort of the school then has to make the decision about, well, if a deal isn't cleared, do you still play a student? I would imagine schools are going to be very careful. About
some schools will and some schools won't.
Yeah, I would think that's going to be because that's a little bit easier to enforce, as far as, like, if you've deemed a deal, you know, if you've decided a deal doesn't pass the inspection, the 12-point inspection or whatever the clearinghouse is going to do, you know, it's a little, like, I think the bigger question is going to be, is this going to force deals under the table? Like, are there going to be deals that the clearinghouse never finds out about, that schools never find out about, because they're directly between an athlete and an entity that maybe wouldn't pass?
Just like the good old days.
That's what I think is more likely than, I mean, I do think the clearinghouse could get rid of, like, the stuff that was made legal by NIL as far as collectives being involved in recruiting. I think some of that could be, you know, it could be made. I'm trying to think here. It's not going to be as official as it was, Brian. Like that stuff. The sort of state sanctioned recruiting interference from collectives feels like it's going to be on the chopping block. Does that mean outside groups won't be involved in recruiting?
I doubt it.
You just mentioned the good old days. So I mean, I think that's where.
So called. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, and. But it does seem like conferences are, you know, conferences are really pressuring schools to play by, you know, adhere to these rules.
To sign papers and say they will adhere to them, they won't sue, blah, 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 blah. We'll see how that turns out. most collectives are being folded into athletic departments, yep, including here at Auburn.
And that was happening while the...
While they were waiting on the House.
Yeah, while the deliberations were going on, yeah.
Yep, so... Yeah, we'll see. I'm very skeptical on how this whole thing is going to work, if it's not going to get blown up by a lawsuit here or there, or, you know, it's not just the schools that can sue, it's the players also, right, and their representatives. So we'll see.
It does feel like it's going to be tough for collectives to get back in the game. Like, I do wonder if we're going to get, like, you know what I mean? Like, it feels like that gene, now that schools can be as involved as they are in direct compensation, I do sort of wonder if they've now, does that mean that they can police what kind of money student athletes can and can't take? That's going to be tougher. It's going to be tougher to enforce. But I do feel like the collective era may have, like, the sun may have set on.
Well, yes, for now.
I do wonder. Yeah, if that's, and that's something that that I think some schools were really eager to. Some schools are really eager to see that cleaned up or regulated in a way that that wasn't happening for a while. But like you said, this could all change with the right lawsuit in front of the right judge.
Yep. So we'll see.
Although the schools are supposed to go to arbitration, I thought that was the other interesting part of the.
That's the schools.
Schools supposed to go to arbitration, but that, I mean, it wasn't schools suing that changed a lot of the things about college athletics over the last 20 years. Right. It was individuals suing for things like NIL and player movement and now revenue sharing. You know, House was. I think people think House is like the House of Representatives or something when they hear House versus NCAA. It's like, no, it's just a swimmer whose last name is House.
Yeah.
It's not Eddie House, the old Miami Heat player, but it's not the shooting guard from the Heat, but it's the guy whose last name was House. And that's the kind of change that, like we said, the right lawsuit in front of the right judge in college athletics can it feels like a lot of these walls are made of particle board, like these load bearing walls, right? Yeah. You knock them down, a house of cards.
Yes.
It's like, oh, it seems sturdy. You pull the right Jenga brick, and
it all falls down.
Sure enough, you got a big old pile. 334-321-1390 is the number to dial. That's Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. I'm Dan Peck. Drew with the controls. We'll be back with more. You are listening to The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Final segment of hour number one on the Friday edition of The Drive. Brian's here. I keep wanting to say Monday and shock people.
Yes.
into thinking
that they've lost. Oh, that would really upset people.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. I'm going to work hard to not do that. I also don't. We don't have a music musing.
No, we are
for
I have written most of the one for Monday, but I'm not giving it away.
No, you can't spoil it. Yeah, so no, you got to keep that. Yep. Keep that under lock and key.
Both you and Bill will get it quickly.
If an anniversary occurs to me or a birthday or something, I will let you know. What I've discovered. But in the meantime, love to hear from you. 334-321-1390 is the Drive hotline presented by Skybar. 334-564-1840, the Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the text box, or they also sponsor the podcast. Fun show all week. You know, we've had a lot of great guests and chronicling, not just the. I think the week started with the recap of the College World Series and the end of the college baseball season. Really fun postseason in college baseball. I know it sort of ended on the sour note of
with the
quick hook.
Yeah,
for the Coastal coach. But in general, I just thought that it was really, regional weekend was fun. Super regional weekend didn't go Auburn's way, but that those two games were high level, super high level baseball. That Friday night at Plainsman Park was incredible.
Yeah,
great crowds. Despite the weather delays and everything, that Friday night against Coastal was a truly remarkable thing. And you look, Brian. This is an Auburn baseball team that one of the big challenges was keeping all the young players in the fold. Ike looks like he's going pro.
Yeah, definitely.
Ike looks like he's going pro, and I think it's understandable. But pretty much everyone else looks like they could be back for another year of the guys that Auburn could have retained.
Yeah, definitely. And those five stud freshmen, I think all five are expected back unless somebody tries to steal them away here. But right now it's looking really good, and I think you can build a really good team around that and what you got coming back, what they've already added from the transfer portal, and what they have coming in with their signing class. I think Auburn baseball has the potential to be even better next season overall, especially depth in pitching and starting pitching overall.
Yeah, love seeing Chase, Bub, and Chris all potentially getting their
I don't think it was me, was it?
Okay, yeah. Well, anyways, 334-321-1390. No, great seeing the freshmen, all back in the fold, and obviously job doesn't appear to be done on the recruiting trail for the baseball team either. I feel like the portal's still worrying, we're still seeing players find new homes.
It's still happening out there baseball wise, portal wise, but I think Auburn's just about done. I still think they would like to get that one corner outfielder, left handed bat, to sort of replace Ike. You can't totally replace Ike, but just to have that option in your lineup, another left handed bat. But I think it's seven transfers now are in, and just looking for one more, as far as I know.
And they've got a lot of returning production. Like you said, a lot of guys that look like even though couple of the key pieces are out of eligibility or electing to move on to the Major League Baseball draft. You know, a lot of these players are a lot of these players are just getting started with their college baseball.
And don't forget about Eric Guevara. You know, a guy who
really can't wait to see what he does
when he's healthy. He can be a special player there. Eric Snow, he's a question mark whether or not he will return or go in the draft. If he does return, he could be your starting shortstop next year. You know, Kay Ballew has battled some injuries, but when he's healthy and he has his timing down, he plays like a future, you know, major league prospect, right? When he's really got it going. So, what can he do his junior year if he can be healthy and have that confidence and get it going?
So, Cade was so exciting as a freshman and had to battle some tough luck this year. Eric is from Panama City, but not the one in the 850, and he's honorary 850 from the other Panama City, that guy's got some fire in the bat, so want to see what he can do if he's healthy all off season.
And he was one of Auburn's best hitters down the stretch too in the postseason.
Brian Matthews from auburnsports.com. We'll be back with more. You are listening to the Friday edition of The Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Friday edition of The Drive. Brian, I keep seeing you and thinking it can't be Friday. That can't possibly be. But it is, in fact, Friday. Thanks for joining us. Dan Peck in the studio. Brian Matthews from robertsports.com. Drew at the controls. Bill is on assignment. He's got like one of those drinks with the umbrella. And he's putting the lime in the coconut right now.
Oh yes,
drink it all up. Call me in the morning. And so, we'll catch Bill when he's back to a more landlocked territory in the next couple of days. But a programming note too. We're missing Thursday and Friday next week, right? We're preempted Thursday and Friday with the July 4th festivities. So we will be off. Hmm. Couple of days at the end of next week, as we keep getting closer. I mean, 3 weeks from today, Brian.
Yes.
Media days will be over. How about that, huh? 3 weeks from today, we will be done with SEC media days, and feels like the time between the end of SEC media days and the beginning of the start of fall practices is always a very quick turnaround, and then fall practices leads you right into the start of the season. You're there pretty soon, and so it feels like we're gonna be in short order kicking the football previewing stuff into high gear as Auburn and Baylor on that collision course for the Friday night game at the end of August. Crazy, you know. And the other thing is, we're a couple of days away from being able to say next month's game between Auburn and Baylor, because we are knocking on the door of July.
Yep.
Auburn and Baylor playing at the
August 29th
at the end of August, and so it's
Friday night.
I mean, look, if you're somebody impacted by school coming back, you know, I hate to rush through the summer like this. I'm already seeing back to school promotions on different websites and commercials. And things like that. I think that really turns up after July 4th is over. I think you start really seeing back to school stuff like throughout the month of July. It's too bad for folks who want to get the abs. You want to squeeze every drop out of their summer vacation. Yeah. But we are rapidly approaching the fall festivities here in college athletics, and that's and yeah, I mean we talked about it a little bit with Auburn landing a couple of recruits in hour number one, but this is a Brian, I thought that the bigger story with the negative momentum on the recruiting trail or the lack of recent good news is it just intensified the pressure Hugh Freeze is under going into this season, and I think the importance of being able to look at those four games against power conference opponents, the first half of the season, Baylor, A&M, Oklahoma, and Georgia. I think it's maybe Baylor, Oklahoma.
Baylor is going to be tough, buddy. Let me just tell you.
Look, all three of the road games are going to be tough, and Georgia's Georgia.
Yep.
And that's your home game. And I mean, he's in a tough spot because, like, I think that 2-4 would be a really tough hole to climb out of, not just for this season, but as far as showing everyone externally that things are going well and holding the roster together internally and keeping a lot of those guys, because I think there are players on the team that I think if Auburn doesn't win this year, it could be tough to keep those guys in the fold and expect to continue. You know what I'm talking about, Brian.
In today's college football world, things can turn quickly either way, right?
Exactly.
If things go bad, things can turn quickly, right? Players can leave, recruiting can blow up in your face, et cetera, et cetera. On the other hand, you now have the ability through the transfer portal, if you use it correctly, to come in and rebuild a roster a lot quicker than you were able to do 6 or 7 years ago.
Right, and I think that it's – I mean, when you look at the roster itself, when you look at the personnel that make up the 2025 Auburn football team, I mean, I've made the point before, if the only job for Hugh Freeze and his staff, if the only job was managing the roster, the state of the, and that's a huge part of the job. You think about what Auburn had when Hugh Freeze stepped into the role after the 22 season, and you think about what he has right now, like it's drastically different and considerably better than what he inherited. Like that, if that was the only job, he would be a tremendous success. It's not the only job. It's upgrading the roster is a key part of a head coach's job, but developing those players and putting them in position to win and then winning is a fairly significant portion of the job as well. And that's where if it doesn't happen this season, I just think you're running out of places to point the finger.
Oh, there's no question about that. And that puts a lot of pressure on him and his staff on this team. And that Baylor game is going to be so big, and Baylor is a really quality football team, especially offensively. They can light up a scoreboard. They got their quarterback back. They got a really good running back back. They've got their top receiver back and some other really good receivers, 4 or 5 stars in the offensive line. This is not a team to scoff at or a team that you should say, well, Auburn should win that, no question. This is going to be a battle, and both teams are going to be fighting for it because Baylor's going into this season thinking they should compete for the top of the Big 12 and maybe be in the playoffs. So this is going to be big.
If you're scoffing at Auburn against any major conference opponent, then you've been in a coma since 2019, too, I think is part of it as well. So, I mean, I would, but you're right. I mean, it's – things are difficult enough when your first three SEC games are at Oklahoma, at A&M, home against Georgia.
That's another reason why you can't lose to Baylor.
It's a brutal first three games of the SEC, compounded with a road game at Baylor to open things. Yep. And it's like, I mean, look, there's no consolation in being the best 2-4 team in the country. Like that's not going to be. Yeah. Being the most talented 2-4 team in America is not gonna get it done.
And so, nobody's gonna care about those two wins too against Ball State and South Alabama.
Exactly. Right. And I think Auburn's and we talked a little bit looking at last year's stats and looking at what could change. I'm optimistic about Jackson Arnold. You know, I like the limited glimpse we got of him in the spring. I was struck by the decision making, how quickly he seemed to be processing things and making a decision and getting the ball out. Again, it's different when you're facing live ammunition. It's different in the spring. But you look at Auburn and last year's Auburn team. It's so easy to point to the quarterback position, and it's so easy to point to different elements of the passing game. Between the 20s, Auburn was a very good passing offense. Like, you look at the numbers, like, you know, Auburn, the problems really popped up in the red zone.
Yeah, and a lot of that's on the offensive line, right? They couldn't run the ball good enough in the red zone. They couldn't protect the quarterback for long enough in the red zone. And, you know, it's also on the coaching staff and the players for just not being able to, run the offense as well as you have to run it once you get down there, once everything gets a little condensed, once it's more intense, once you've got to make the play in that big situation. Auburn wasn't able to do that enough.
Historically, if you told me, like, all right, what's probably wrong if you've got an offense that's moving the ball between the 20s and sputters in the red zone, I would say I would offer, just like put the lime in the coconut. I got a couple of diagnoses here. I'm thinking, do you have red zone targets? Do you have guys that can get open and catch the ball? And do you have some of that?
I think Auburn had that
this past year. I think Auburn seems to have that in 2025.
Should, yep.
Is your offensive line a liability against the run or the, like?
It wasn't both last year.
Yeah, run blocking or pass blocking. Is there a weakness there?
A bit of run blocking, but still not the best.
I'll tell you what, and I would ask about your quarterback's processing speed. Right. It's not just about accuracy and some of the physical stuff. It's about when are you making those decisions. We had people, I think lamenting no matter who was in the game. I think we had people sort of lamenting that aspect of Auburn's offense. It felt like the timing was off between the quarterback and when the ball needed to get there, and that's something that is going to be more pronounced in the red zone.
I feel like the offense was kind of stale too. Just to be honest, yep. I didn't see a lot of creativity either. That's just my opinion.
And I think some of that's going to have to. You can't survive another season of that. Nope. And it's going to be tough to maintain the status quo in that regard. Let's get to Philly Fanatic before we take our first break of our number two here on the Friday Drive. Philly Fanatic, Jani Broome, hey. The newest member of the 76ers.
How about that?
I was going to bring that up because some of my friends, they're happy because last year Joel Embiid was out half the season, and without him, they are just flat out terrible.
Yes, they are.
You know, they had Jimmy Buckett, and the problem with Joel Embiid is he didn't want to share with Jimmy Buckett. And then he went to Miami, and then he was ready to go again, and Joel said no. But I guess you can't have two superstars that want to fall on the same team.
Yeah, Embiid's a tough one, man, because I like his game, but it just feels like, you know, he's a bit of a hothouse flower, right? It feels like everything has to be perfect, or things fall apart, and things have fallen apart in a lot of these Philly seasons. I think he strikes me as somebody who, and he did not go well with Jimmy Butler, but he strikes me as like he needs a ball dominant co-star. Like he needs someone who can be and that can make him sort of fall in line and evolve his game. Yeah, I don't know. I do like that playing alongside Embiid could give Jani Broome opportunities. If Embiid is healthy, there could be load management opportunities for Jani, and if Embiid's not healthy, there could be a lot of playing time in the picture for Jani.
Yeah, I think so. And he'll be playing in front of a big audience, you know, and I think that's good going up against, you know, the Boston Celtics and, there's a big rivalry they have. But I'm going to segue into Peyton Falzon, or Falzoni, depending on how you want to pronounce it. He's from Nazareth, which is Northeast Pennsylvania. up there by Bethlehem. You've got Bethlehem and Nazareth right next to you. Got some biblical stuff going on there. And Allentown, you remember Billy Joel's song?
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah, they tore all the factories down.
Yep.
Yeah, that was all those steel factories. They went out, and that they're redoing that area, and they have good football there. And you knew anybody who was all everything, Penn State was going to sign. So getting him away from there, that's big news.
I agree. That's a huge pickup. I think he's a really quality quarterback, and you know, I think he has a chance to come in and play fairly early, depending on the situation with, you know, the quarterback room and who else is back or who else comes in. But I like his upside a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to be measured with any high school quarterback because the portal is just such a huge part of the quarterback position now in college football. And, you know, you don't know what rosters are going to – I mean, trying to project the 2026 Auburn roster – right, is a lot more difficult than it used to be because there's a lot, you know, everyone's got a decision to make.
Well, I mean, Walker White was gone after a year.
The entire quarterback room is gone from last.
Like, I don't think they're in that situation this year. But
everyone has a decision to make when the season's over. And so I think it could be like I get the sense that Hugh Freeze's plan is a quarterback that could evolve into a starter out of high school in every recruiting class. Like, that's what he'd like to get every single year.
Tough, but he'd
like to. And it's tough, but it seems like he's landed one for the third year in a row. Like, he would say, I know you could argue if Walker.
But
Walker saw the field as a freshman, was sort of a raw project, but seemingly for the second or third year in a row, Hugh Freeze has gotten a commitment from that kind of quarterback.
I want to change the narrative just a minute. You've got this guest host who does his musing, and I want to throw something out at him. This is really important. All right. Now, this is the nominees for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So I'm going to say them, and I want you to say yay or nay, okay?
Okay.
So we're going to start out with Bad Company.
Well, yeah, Bad Company is an easy yes, right? I'm going to be honest with you. I'm more inclusive than exclusive.
Yeah.
When it comes to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, like I'm gonna. It's gonna be. But I would vote. I would be a yes on Bad Company personally, Brian.
All right.
Yes.
How about Mariah Carey?
That's a definite yes for me.
Yeah, Mariah Carey to me. Yeah. I mean, now that we've blurred the lines between like pop music,
right,
and rock and roll,
everybody goes in there.
Over
right?
the last, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think you could take issue with a lot of the inductees being rock and roll acts, but I think if we're celebrating pop music over the last half century or more, Mariah Carey is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yep.
Okay, three quick ones: Joe Cocker, Billy Idol, and Cyndi Lauper.
Ooh. Oh,
I'm an easy yes. How about this? I'm an easy yes on Lauper and
Cocker.
Joe Cocker.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
And I'm not sure
on Billy Idol.
With Billy Idol, he's got a couple of hits.
He had that great. He had a nice run there for two or three years
one
in the
of
80s.
The, right? One of the, I would say, one of the most popular artists on Wings 94.3. Like you hear White Wedding and Cradle of Love Rebel Yell a lot. I would be more of everyone you listed. I'm a maybe on Billy Idol of everyone.
All right, here's some groups that I've never heard of: Oasis, Outkast. I know Soundgarden.
Okay, so Oasis. I'm in on all three of those.
Yeah, Oasis is a
Champagne
is a,
Supernova.
Yeah, Oasis, a British rock band from the 90s. Right. They were popular sort of post grunge.
Yep.
Biggest band in the world for about an album.
Yep.
Outkast, a seminal Atlanta hip hop group.
Easy
Hall of Famer for me. Soundgarden's an interesting. I mean, Chris Cornell was fantastic.
Right. They're a big part of that movement.
Yeah, they were heavy, not a band that had a ton of pop crossover. Mm-hmm. Like, they were a heavy grunge.
What
metal
was that
act.
One album they had though that was so good?
Bad Motorfinger,
yes.
Probably.
Yeah. Yes, that's. I mean, that's a classic album from that era. I think so.
Well, okay. What do you think about the Black Crowes and the White Stripes?
I'm a yes on the White Stripes and a no on the Black Crowes. The Black Crowes are a band to me. They had a couple of hits. I would be of everyone you listed. The first no that I would throw out there is probably for the Black Crowes.
What's a White Stripes song? I don't
Seven Nation Army. You've heard everywhere. Jack White's a genius.
Yeah.
They call him Garage Rock. So two more. I don't even know how to say it. Fresh P H I.
Talking about fish?
Fish.
They're a jam band.
Dave
Matthews, but the Grateful Dead.
Grateful Dead, but less poppy.
They've
been around for 3 decades.
Yeah, hardcore following, but not really a crossover band that got played on the radio.
That's the kind of band I think belongs in the Hall of Fame, because maybe not everybody knows them, but the people who know them absolutely love them. Right,
dedicated following among their fans. Grateful Dead's a good comparison.
Okay, Mana.
That's a Latin rock band I know almost nothing about.
Yeah, me neither. Okay, the last one for me is definitely has to be in Chubby Checker.
You know, Chubby Checker. I think the Twist is a Hall of Fame record. But I wonder. Yeah. But putting Chubby Checker himself in, I feel like you'd want to. A bigger body of work from.
But he did the Twist and Let's Twist.
He did the Twist and Let's Twist, yes. and the song with the Fat Boys.
And the limbo rock.
Right. I'm not going to stand in the way of Chubby. Right. Chubby getting in.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm a yes on Chubby.
There's a lot of us oldies that are still doing the Twist, and we're still listening to Chubby Checker.
How many songs from that era do you still write?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Didn't Warren Zevon make it too, or was that maybe the year before?
He's not listed here. There's another one, Joy Division.
Oh, Joy Division. Yeah, New Order, and Joy Division. As one act, they're an '80s new wave band. They're outstanding too. Hey, Philly Fanatic, great stuff.
Okay. Bye bye.
Appreciate it. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. As we're going to take a break. We will be back with more. Who we got on the phone? Jimmy, hang on. We will get to you when we come back. This is the Friday edition of The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Thank you to...
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Hey, Brian, tell folks about all the great work you and the rest of the band do over at AuburnSports.com.
Could be some big changes coming here. Stay tuned to the whole, On Three Bought Rivals.
So
we could have some news here in the next few days.
I read the trades.
So stay tuned for that. But
In the meantime,
check us out, AuburnSports.com. Not a whole lot is going on. Of course, we had coverage of the two commitments this week. I'm doing some things, previewing some games, previewing some positions, for Auburn going forward. Keeping up with the latest there and following the baseball and their portal machinations too and all that. But, you can follow me on social, BMATAU. Check us out, AuburnSports.com, and we will have some news on that front here in the next few days.
Hour number two of The Drive, presented by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Jimmy is hanging on the Skybar hotline. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. Just wanted to let y'all know, for Auburn fans, there's a special event coming up on July the 8th. It's presented by the Elmore County Auburn Club.
All right.
We started it last year, a Live the Creed Award, where, we give an award to an individual there that exemplifies the different characteristics and qualities of the Auburn Creed.
Is this how I find out that I... Oh, never mind. I'll let you announce the winner, Jimmy.
Maybe next year.
Oh, man. All right.
Last year, we presented it to Dylan Cardwell.
Oh, okay.
And he's just outstanding. That's who we thought of when we first started setting this award up. He just had every mark checked on the Auburn Creed. But this year, we're giving it to Luke Deal.
Oh, right on.
And he's another outstanding individual there. He got the Shug Jordan Award, and he's also a finalist for the Jason Witten, the National Award for Man of the Year. And he's just a great guy. I've met him a couple of times, talked to him. But we're going to be presenting that award to him on July the 8th in Wetumpka at the Civic Center. And we'll also have as a speaker the Auburn strength and conditioning coach, Dom Sturdinski.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of good things about his talks and, you know, how he's a good motivator. So we're looking forward to that, and we're having a prime rib and chicken dinner that night too. So we'll have Auburn cheerleaders there, and so it's just be a good night for Auburn people and talk a little football.
Oh, no, that's wonderful, and Luke has been Luke was a guest. He was one of our Tiger Takes guys a couple of years ago, and you know, he's a big Wings 94.3 listener, big classic rock guy. So always happy to. I know Luke's involved. He was out there with the coaching staff in for A Day. I think he's involved with working in the tight end room a little bit, even though his time on the team has come to a close. He'd be a great coach. So wouldn't be shocked at all to see him.
Spending some time with the Detroit Lions. Yep. I think he signed a contract with them, you know, an undrafted player.
I don't think his playing career is done by any stretch of the imagination. And I think that a team could find, you know, he's not a conventional tight end. He's a phenomenal blocker and like a dirty work guy who's, you know, more than willing to get in there and get physical. And I think coaches, you know, especially that nut in Detroit, I think will really appreciate Luke Deal's style of really appreciate Luke Deal's style of football when he gets to see him.
What I found interesting, he's from South Carolina, you know, not so close to Clemson. And when he first visited Auburn, he said he just fell in love with it and knew that's where he wanted to play his college ball. So he's turned into a true Auburn man.
That's a story that a lot of us can relate to from back in the day.
Absolutely. Jimmy, that's really cool. Yeah, tell folks how they can get involved.
Okay, we've got a Facebook page, Elmore County Auburn Club, and you could go to that page and it'll tell you how to obtain tickets. And it's, like I said, it's going to be a good event, a lot of Auburn people there. And we were hoping Dylan was coming back. When he got it last year, he said, I want to be back to present this next year. But I don't know with his NBA schedule how that's going to work out. But,
yeah, might have to be over FaceTime or might have to be digital.
but I just wanted to mention that to all the Auburn listeners out there. No,
that's wonderful. Good luck with your event, and congratulations to Luke on the award. Well deserved. And you know, our buddy Justin Ferguson just spoke at the Athens, Georgia Auburn Club last night with Coach Corey Williams from the basketball team, and we may be branching out into public speaking and events like that for Auburn Club. Best of luck with it, Jimmy, and I will let me know where to send my resume for next year's award,
I'll be sure to put you on the list.
can't wait. Appreciate it. Yeah. If the first 200 or so guys say no, I will be there to accept.
Okay, because we know you're a true Auburn man. That's for sure.
thank you so much, Jimmy.
He's true something.
Best of luck to you. Absolutely. And it's really really cool. Elmore County. Auburn Club, given their award to a friend of the show.
Home of Ben Grubbs back in the day.
Home of Ben Grubbs.
Yep, I was there for his announcement way back in the day. It's probably been 20 years now.
And Luke's been a good friend of the show. So yeah, very cool. And we got to catch up with Luke again before he heads up to Detroit. And like I said, when the playing career's over, if Luke wants to do it, he's one of those guys, Brian, where you get a coach vibe
from
him, like listening to him talk. And I feel like that's been the case for couple of years with Luke Deal, and he soaked up so much football knowledge. Coach, you know, playing for three staffs.
Yeah, that can help. Yeah,
soak up a lot of different, lot of different football perspective.
Yes, yeah.
And so, congratulations to Luke on that, and we'll chat with him soon. Very, very cool to hear.
Got some great recruiting advice under Harson, of course. You know.
You got all kinds of advice, and we will. I'll tell you what. We got Uncle Ollie hanging on. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with Uncle Ollie. He's hanging on the Drive Hotline presented by Skybar. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. 334-564-1840. They also sponsor the podcast. We'll be back with more. You're listening to The Drive.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Friday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Brian Matthews from armoredsports.com. Drew at the controls. It's a fun series of calls hitting a couple of different topics here as we
like different topics.
Get ready for the weekend. Even the quiz from Philly about the different music. Although I'm not a very harsh judge when it comes to putting people.
Put them all in.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the difference. Is that Baseball Hall of Fame? Candidate's a no.
Dale Murphy.
You know what? Because other borderline candidates got in.
Yes.
I think that the Dale Murphy argument is like, okay, if Jim Rice is a Hall of Famer, then by all means put in Dale Murphy. Yep. It's either they all get in, you know, as far as the borderlines, or run an exclusive Hall of Fame with none of them. But once you put Jim Rice in, yes, I think the argument against Dale Murphy weakened substantially. Anyways, let's get to Uncle Ollie, who's hanging on the phone. 334-321-1390, Drive Hotline presented by Sky Bar. What's up, Unc?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for buzzing in on a Friday.
Yeah, so I'm going to piggyback on the last caller. If Dylan Carwell doesn't show up, it's not about wouldn't. It's because he couldn't. That is an Auburn man.
Oh, yeah. No, and the story of, I think not just in the story of being a guy that was, and Dylan had other SEC offers out of high school, but I don't know if it was a consensus, oh, this is going to grow into a contributor for a really good team. Like, I think there were some questions coming out of high school about his ceiling, and this is a guy who I mean, it's clear how hard he's worked. It's clear that, you know, his infectious personality and attitude has made a positive impact on so many different people, and he's also I think deserves
credit. He got engaged too, didn't he?
And I think he deserves credit because I think both of the last two seasons. You could talk about, well, he could have gone somewhere else, and he could have pursued a bigger role and more individual glory on the court, and maybe even more money, and bypassed a lot of that, seemingly out of loyalty to his coaches and his teammates and his university.
Yeah, and that's again, he's an Auburn guy. That was where his loyalty was.
I commend that because if I'm in his position and you're offering me one halfpenny more to go put I'd have to get an offer first I don't blame anyone who goes and who plays it like a mercenary and goes and takes the biggest offer every single offseason because it would be hard to advise a kid not to do that when you're only playing for a couple of years and who knows how long you're going to be getting offers this size. And for Dylan to show the personal character and to prioritize other things, he's also very, very serious about his faith. And I think that, you know, has made that clear when he gets opportunities to do so. Like, no, I think it's very commendable and shows shows unique character. I think in a guy like Dylan Cardwell.
Yeah, and it's just refreshing. It really is just refreshing this day and time where everybody has different modes. It's just refreshing that a guy says, "You know what? I really like it here. I think I want to stay."
Yeah, so, again, can't blame a guy who's got his hand out, but it's cool to know that that's not every college athlete.
Exactly. The other thing I want to talk about was, maybe I'm wrong, but I kind of get the feeling that Auburn baseball is about to become Auburn basketball, where it's going to be really difficult to buy a season ticket.
It's amazing.
And I hope I'm right. Because I really feel like Auburn baseball is on the brink of being Auburn basketball. I just feel they are there.
You know the difference? The difference is that I feel like there are a lot more, as good as the conference was in men's basketball this past year, there are probably more baseball teams in the SEC that year in and year out see themselves in that top tier. Along with and if Auburn joins that top tier, that's fantastic. But that's a more crowded group than I think the top tier in men's basketball is probably pretty exclusive right now in the SEC. Although it's growing in that sport too, because you better have Florida in your top tier after they just won a national championship, and
yeah.
Tennessee and Alabama just went to the Elite Eight, and everyone likes Kentucky and Arkansas going into this season, and then you've got Auburn, who I think is going to be expected,
and
to
Alabama, who's been really good in the last five, yeah. 6 years.
I mean, you've got nearly half the league that feels like they're in genuine championship contender mode in men's basketball, and maybe even more teams than that in baseball. But I think Auburn is in that group.
Yeah, hey Brian, yes. I know you're the big music guy, and I always love talking to you about
Thank
music.
You.
So I'm going to give you something that you may or may not have ever heard before, but I got it from a very reliable source.
All right. So
I had a client of mine, a guy named Kim Payne, rest in peace. He passed away 3 or 4 years ago, but he was a roadie for the Allman Brothers.
Oh, wow. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I kind of was like, "Are you sure?" He goes, "Dude, go get the Live at Fillmore East, flip it over." Hmm. There's a picture of all the roadies, and we're all holding Pat's Blue Ribbon can. So
nice.
I went and bought the album. I flipped it over. He was there.
That's awesome.
He was a roadie. Matter of fact, he got credit thanks to Greg Allman. He wrote one line in Midnight Rider, which was, "I got one more silver dollar."
Yeah.
And
that's a great line.
Greg Allman gave him writing credits.
So Kim got
royalties every month from Midnight Rider.
That's incredible.
But anyway, what I was going to tell you was, so I got to talking to him one day, and I said, "Kim, please answer me this. There's a song that the Allman Brothers do. It's called In Memory of Elizabeth Reed. There's no words. It's just music. Can you please tell me what that song's about?" He said, "Okay, this is the gospel truth." He said, "Dickie Betts wrote that song. Mm-hmm. He had written it, but did not have a title for it." And he said that, of course, they were all in Macon. They all lived in Macon, Georgia.
Yep.
And so did Bob Skaggs. Bob Skaggs was living in Macon, Georgia. And when Bob Skaggs would go on the road, Dickie Betts was messing around with his wife.
Oh.
And so one night, Dickie Betts took Bob Skaggs' wife to a cemetery to do the deed. And when they were doing it, he looked up, and on the tombstone it said, "In memory of Elizabeth Reed."
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And he said, "That's it. That's the title of the song."
Wow.
And so,
I hope Bob Skaggs is not listening to this.
Well, Bob Skaggs, that was like three wives ago. Bob, that was back in the 70s. That was like three wives ago for Bob. But anyway, I always thought that was very interesting that Dickie Betts wrote the song but didn't have a title, but that's how he came up with the title.
Wow, that's a great story.
Wild Allman, Wild Allman Brothers story. Good stuff. Appreciate the phone call. 334-321-1390. We will be back to wrap things up on the Friday edition of The Drive. Stick around.
At Dixie Electric Plumbing and Air, your comfort is all.